Hello and welcome to Show Hosting Secrets, How to Be a Great Talk Show Host. I am Michael Madden and I will be your host and moderator for this training session, and I'm joined by talent coach and agent David Brody. David is the CEO of the Broadcaster Marketing Services, which is an agency that coaches and represents on-air show hosts and talent. To learn a little bit more about David's services, he can be located at sportsbroadcastingcoach.com. Welcome, David, and perhaps you can give us a brief overview of just what a talent coach is.
Michael, first of all, thank you for having me along. I appreciate that. And a talent coach is someone who builds people up. I think the initial perception is, well, if I go to a talent coach, he's going to tear me apart, and then we build people up. And that's the whole idea of it. And I work with all genres from sports, general talk, political. I do work with a lot of play-by-play guys, ton of talk show hosts, updates, newscasters, et cetera. And there are just so many facets to communicating. And we're really communicating. We're not broadcasting. We're communicating. That's the whole idea. We're trying to be conversational and trying to communicate, trying to find ourselves, trying to find our voice, trying to be real. And at the end of the day, trying to connect with the people that we're talking to. And it's very difficult, I've learned over the years, to fix what you don't know is broken. Almost impossible to do that. So my job as a talent coach is to identify the weaknesses and to build up your strengths, because everyone has strengths, everyone has weaknesses. No one's ever done a perfect show. We can always get better, constantly evolving and improving. And that's my job as a talent coach.
And it's not just to find the problems, because you work with brand new broadcasters as
sure.
well. It's a part of laying the foundation.
Oh, yeah.
As a caveat, I have observed David working with that talent that was from way back in the boondocks in very tiny markets. And they're currently in major markets, and they attribute their success to David, to the building blocks of success, because David obviously understands what the industry, being a broadcaster himself, understands what the industry is looking for and what is required in order to maximize one's abilities. So let's get right into some of those building blocks, David, and let's talk about the six essential guidelines for interviewing.
Sure. And let's break it down. When you do an interview, the first thing you have to ask yourself is, why am I doing the interview? What is the reason for the interview? What does this guest add to what I'm trying to do? What does he bring to the table? And too often, Michael, people bring guests on, and there's no reason for the guest. And they don't understand what they're trying to accomplish. So that's the first thing you have to say to yourself. Why? Why do I want this person on? Okay, that's number one. We've got to ask questions about the topic at hand. You know, opinions are huge. We talk about this all the time. You know, you have to have opinions. As a talk show host, you must have opinions. They have to be relevant, though. No one cares about the 1922 Boston Red Sox. No one cares. And when you're doing an interview, you have to think in terms of, okay, is what we're trying to get here relevant? Does the listener care about what we're trying to extract from this subject? Okay, we have to give a little bit of background information on what we're discussing. Who is the person? It's very important that people follow along. Everything we do in radio, when we communicate, we have to make sure that people understand what we're talking about and that they can follow along, because otherwise they're going to be lost. And it's a whole lot easier to tune out than it is to figure it out. So we give a little bit of background information, we get people up to speed on who that person is, and it's very important during the interview that we reset. Who are we talking to? Doesn't that drive you crazy when you're in the car and you tune to your favorite radio station and they're interviewing someone and you have no idea who they're talking to? That bothers the heck out of me, and I know it bothers most people. And how often do you hear this? The interview is coming to a close, few minutes left, you've just tuned in, and at the end of the interview, the interviewer says, thank you for joining us. Never mentions the person. Well, who have we been talking to? That's essential. So we have to make sure that our listener plays along.
David, you mentioned we have to reset. Let's go back to the basics
sure.
with the assumption that someone doesn't know what resetting is.
Explain. Sure. Who are we talking to? Who are we talking to right now I have Hillary Clinton on the phone. Okay? Now, that may be obvious. You may recognize her voice. But most people aren't as recognizable. Their voice isn't as recognizable. So it's important that we reset. And I can tell you, at ESPN, they reset their topics every 3 minutes. It may seem like a lot, but it's important for people to be able to follow along. And that's the whole idea of doing that reset. Talking to Hillary Clinton, talking about whatever it is that we're discussing. So people don't feel like they've missed anything. They're part of our conversation. Ask questions to which the audience doesn't know the answer. The curiosity principle. We have to be curious. When we do interviews, we have to be curious. We have to think in terms of, okay, Johnny is sitting there on his couch right now. What does he want out of this interview subject? What is he trying to get out of this? Not just about what Michael Madden wants or David Brody or whomever is doing the interview, but I'm always thinking, I'm very curious when I do an interview, very curious. What does that listener want to hear? And I want to be different. I want to get something that's unique that the next person who interviews this subject isn't thinking, isn't able to get. And we have to listen carefully. And it's huge that we listen because most people, in all honesty, when they do interviews, they're not very good listeners. I had a guy come to me last week, and he's a fairly well-known television personality in Birmingham, Alabama, and he said to me, I need help with my interviews. And I said, where do you think you have a weakness? He said, I don't listen. I know I'm not a good listener. And a very quick story, I was doing the Oakland Raiders pregame show many, many years ago with a guy named Jim Plunkett, Heisman Trophy winner. We had Ken Stabler on. And I'll never forget this. Plunkett asked Stabler a question, and I was thinking about what I was going to do next, and I wasn't listening. And when that question was answered, I had the follow-up. And you can only guess that the follow-up was exactly what Plunkett asked Stabler. Now, Kenny Stabler is a very nice guy, and he could have made me look silly, and he started out by saying, well, as I just mentioned to Jim, and Michael, I knew it right then and there. I said, I wasn't listening. Man, I look like a fool, like an absolute idiot, because I wasn't paying attention. And so often, our next question is a result of what the interview subject has just said. Listen, I write stuff down. When the person is talking, I'm writing down bullet points. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe there's a good follow-up here. We have to listen. We don't want to miss anything.
Okay, so I will reset real briefly here over the six essential guidelines for interviewing. The first is to lead with the fastball. Why do you have this person on? That's
sure.
The first question. Next, the second essential guideline for interviewing, ask questions about the topic at hand. The third is sometimes you need to provide a brief background on the topic. And then the fourth guideline for interviewing is to ask questions to which the audience doesn't know the answer. It's kind of the curiosity principle, if I heard you say that correctly.
Absolutely.
Okay, and then listen carefully for two reasons. One, that your next question is frequently answered, and you gave us a great example of that if we don't pay attention. And it's only human. Sometimes we are thinking about the next question, but it's really essential to slow the mind down because essential guideline number six is you'll get your best questions as follow-ups to what your guest has said. Okay, so those are the six essential guidelines for interviewing. Now, David, we like numbers here. We're going to talk about the seven deadly sins of interviewing. And deadly sin number one is?
The no query. And it is a big-time sin. No query. The query makes the demand. A question is just a statement without a query, and it keeps the interview subject from hiding. And, you know, you look at these sideline reporters who have been castigated for so long, and I've been hearing it for so many years, these sideline reporters have to go. They're terrible. Well, no, sideline reporters don't have to go. What has to go is the people who don't understand how to ask a question. Hey, coach, tough first half. That's not a question. And what that does is it gives the coach an escape route. It gives him an exit ramp. He doesn't have to answer the question. He can turn around and say, yeah, it was. We'll get him in the second half. Better question is, coach, your team gave up 35 points. What went wrong in that first half? That's a question. That's not just a statement. That's a question. And the coach is going to have to answer that. He's going to have to sit there and say, well, you know, our defense didn't buckle down, and we're going to have to do this, we're going to have to do that. So, again, we look at what we call an exit ramp, and we want to make sure that we don't give that coach or player or whomever an exit ramp. And that's the reason why we have to ask the question, and the query is the question.
Okay, and so basically what we want to reiterate is that a statement is not a question.
Correct.
And we'll oftentimes hear a statement being made and then say, talk about that.
Sure.
And that's not a question because you're now allowing the interviewee to take control of the interview and to go wherever he wants with that particular statement that was being made. Okay.
Correct.
At least in interviewing number two.
Double barrel questions. When you ask this type of question, you're not adding a question, you're replacing a question, and again, we bring up exit ramp, and that's what we're giving. The subject will answer the question that is least problematic for him or her, and it happens all the time. And whenever we hear the double barrel question, you're never going to get two responses, two answers. It isn't going to happen. So if I were to say, Michael Madden, I've got two questions for you, and the first one is really easy, the second one is more difficult, obviously your response is going to be, let me tackle number one, and you're never going to get to number two. One question at a time.
Yeah, when you say double barrel, let me just clarify, that's asking two questions in one.
Yep.
If you're asking a person, let's just say a political figure, well, you won by a how did you win your election in such a landslide? And what do you think that the main message the voters received was? Well, that's two questions. And it's a common mistake if you listen to even the top pros at CNN or ESPN or Fox or wherever, most of them make that mistake, and it's really a matter. If the question is good enough, it deserves to stand alone on its own. So ask two questions instead of one question with two parts to
right.
it.
Break it up.
Okay, the third deadly sin of interviewing.
Overloading when you have too much topic and not enough query. As an example, what do you think of sports? Not a good question. You need to be a little more specific. What is it about sports that you're passionate about? What do you think about sports? Well, how do you answer that question? I don't know. I think it's good. I think it's okay. You must be more specific with your question. And answers are a function of the question.
So overloading the question is really becoming too verbose.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. The fourth deadly sin of interviewing.
Well, the fourth, remarks, and some would argue it's the most common of the deadly sins, and any remark gives the guest an exit ramp. We're not trying to prove how smart we are. We're not trying to prove how knowledgeable we are, not during the interview. And so often you hear the host try to go one-on-one with the interview subject, and it's just not the place. So as an example, if I'm doing a talk show and I've got Peter Gammons on, I mean, one of the real great baseball minds, and I'm arguing with Peter, and I'm disagreeing with Peter, and I'm giving him my side of the argument, and we're going back and forth. You know what that is? That's a waste of time. Again, it goes back to, why are you bringing this person on? I'm bringing this person on because he or she is going to provide knowledge, information that I can't. That's why I'm bringing the person on. Let that person be the star. That's the whole idea of bringing that person on, and especially a person like a Peter Gammons. That person knows a lot more about baseball than you do. Don't try to go one-on-one with Peter Gammons. It's a waste of time, and the listener is sitting there saying, shut up already. Let me hear more of Peter and less of you.
And that's a really important part. Now, if we can tailor this a little bit, if for a caller on the show, just somebody that calls into the show, how do you treat them differently than, say, a guest who comes on?
Oh, completely differently. You have to understand, as a host, you're the star. The caller's filler. That's all he or she is. He's filler. You're the star. You're the show. You're the reason why people go to that show.
On to the fifth
deadly
sin of interviewing.
Yes, and that's the trigger word, when the word is more important than the question. I don't know how often we hear this, but we do hear this. Jerk is a trigger word. Okay, we're asking a question to a politician, to an athlete, whomever it might be, a coach. We're trying to get something out of that person. All right? We're not trying to anger the individual. And a word like jerk is a trigger word. Okay? You talk to a coach. You know what? Your player was a real jerk in that particular at-bat. When he went after the umpire, he was a real jerk. Well, what's the coach going to say to you? He's going to stand up for his player, and he's going to take exception with that trigger word, which is jerk. You're not going to get the response that you're looking for. So we stay away from those inflammatory words, and certainly a word like jerk is inflammatory.
Exactly. Okay, the sixth deadly sin of interviewing.
Well, hyperbole, loading up with statistical information, and if you overstate things, the guest will typically understate his response. We have to understand the computer is a great place to get all kinds of stats. The world has changed. I want to know about stats. I go to the computer, and it's instantaneous. I can find whatever I want. We're trying to keep stats off the radio. We're trying to be a personality, and we want to incorporate our personality. So let's not load up on stats. And I hear it too often in interviews where someone tries to be smart, and it goes back to what we were talking about with remarks, trying to prove just how smart they are. We got all these stats, and we're spending all this time going over all the stats. And all of a sudden, the interview subject says, yeah, I agree with that. They're not balancing your question with their response. So we're loading up on statistical information. We're overstating what we're trying to say. And then, invariably, the guest is going to understate with his response. So, you know what? Try to keep the stats out of that, out of your questions. You may have a couple of numbers that you need. The political interview. Hey, you know what, Bob Smith, you got 52% of the vote. Get him to respond to that. But you don't need a whole litany of numbers. It doesn't serve the purpose.
And not just in stats, but when we're talking about hyperbole, I see this a lot, but in dealing with, let's say, a beauty contest winner. Well, you're the most beautiful person in the world, and they're flattering, they're overdoing it,
right.
Almost gushing at this person. And it
right.
really, the natural, normal tendency is to recoil from that, and then it kind of quashes the interview when you're using hyperbole.
Mm-hmm.
So avoid it. Now,
correct.
The seventh
correct.
And final deadly sin of interviewing.
Well, the closed query, the yes-no question. Were you shocked? Were you surprised? What's the problem with this? Well, we're probably going to get a yes-no response. It's a yes-no question, so we're going to get a yes-no response. Were you surprised? No, we don't want that, because if the answer is, yes, I was, now where do we go? Better question, how surprised were you? Were you shocked? Were you angry? How angry were you? What created this anger? Trying to get some meat and potatoes out of the subject, out of the guest, not one-word responses, and invariably a yes-no question is going to result in a yes-no response. So stay away from it.
Okay, David, reset the seven deadly sins of interviewing briefly.
No query, the double barrel questions, overloading, remarks, trigger words, hyperbole, closed queries, the yes, no question.
And obviously we stay away from all of those. And you brought up an example, you asked a yes, no question. And a big reason for that is a perfect segue into our next segment, which is the six critical words for interviews. Explain.
Well, it really becomes a matter of almost cheating if you know how to do this effectively. And you go to the W's, and the who, the what, the where, the how, the why. It's really simple. You're sitting there, and whatever it is that you're covering, whether it's a sporting event, political rally, doesn't matter, and it's your turn to ask a question, and I'm thinking, okay, where do I go? What do I do? Go to one of the W's. It's very simple. When? Think about it. Okay, a W pops in your head. When? When did you decide to run for office? There you go. Okay, what? What was it about your term that you're most proud of? How were you able to beat the opposition? So it's very simple. Once you understand the power of these W words, again, I hate to be overly simplistic, Michael, but it's almost like cheating. It's that simple. Go to the W's. You can't fail.
And the who, what, where, how, and when.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Answering all of those. If you're asking a question in the example that you gave before, were you surprised by this or were you surprised by that? That doesn't ask a question. It doesn't start off. A question will start off with one of those six words.
Right, and it's so easy to have a follow-up. And keep your questions lean, okay? They don't have to be long. That's another big problem that we hear all the time. People love to talk, and sometimes they talk way too much. Get to the point. Keep it open, keep it neutral, keep it lean. Get right to your point.
How long should a question be at the most?
Oh, gosh, I can't imagine a need for anything longer than 20 seconds. And that's on the long side. I've heard questions 45 seconds, a minute. And the problem is people are redundant. You can't ask a question that's 45 seconds or a minute that isn't redundant. They're repeating themselves. They're asking the question five times. Get right to the point. It doesn't have to be very long. And it's a very effective question to say, well, what were you thinking at that moment? Damn, right there. Gets right to the point.
Right.
What were you hoping to accomplish? Great question.
Yeah, and if a question is any longer than 15 seconds, at the most somewhere in there, then it really becomes kind of a statement slash filibuster. So,
no question.
Again, to reset, the who, it gets, because it gets to the person or to the people who are at the crux of the story. The what, it gets to the issue. The when, it gets to the time. The where, it gets to the place. The why, it gets to the method. And the how provides the explanation.
Mm-hmm.
Hows are great questions, are great words to lead off with. Why is that your opinion as well?
Yeah, how is a great one. I mean, people, they have to respond in a manner that's going to give you thickness, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get some thickness, some depth to the response. How did you do it? How? It makes people think. And that's, again, what I said before. The answers are a function of the question. You ask a question that's going to provide an in-depth response, you're going to get an in-depth response. And how will do that for you?
How really it forces the questioner, the person receiving the question, it takes away the opportunity to answer, give a short, brief answer.
Right.
It requires an explanation. It's an open-ended question.
Sure.
Okay, David, we'll move on to the next segment, which is the show hosting and developing your on-air personality. What are some of the keys to developing one's on-air personality?
Michael, I think it starts with being yourself. And I recently did an interview with a great sportscaster, Tim Brando, for a book that I'm in the process of writing. And I asked him for the advice he has for all young broadcasters. And he said, find your voice. And I understand exactly what he's talking about there. Find you. Be you. Be who you are. Because at the end of the day, we're about being a personality. We're not trying to be a talk show host. We're trying to be a personality and show that, you know what, we walk on Main Street just like you, the listener. We're the same. We're the guy who is sitting in the bleachers at your kid's Little League baseball game. That's all we are. And we're going to take that personality, and we're going to move from the bleachers, and we're going to sit behind the mic. And you have to be yourself. And there's nothing more important that you can tell any young broadcaster or communicator. Again, I prefer to use the term communicator, the word communicator, than broadcaster. But be you, because you can't be great being someone else. You want to be unique. And it's about your unique awesomeness. Being the best you is always going to be better than the second best Jim Rome. So be who you are. Find your voice. That's number one.
And equally critical, the world already has the Rush Limbaughs and you know, all the other show hosts that are out there. What the world needs is a unique voice, you. And you are the only one that can be you, and that's really essential. I think a lot of young broadcasters try to, and it's okay to pattern oneself after another person, but when you start to emulate a lot of their mannerisms and their whole personality the way they are, the listeners and viewers to your show can spot a phony, and that turns them off quick.
So, big time.
Another point for developing one's on-air personality.
Well, you know, you're looking at being an entertainer, and that's huge. We want to be an entertainer. We want to use information to entertain. And at the end of the day, we have to understand this is about entertaining. You know, we're a personality, and use that personality to entertain. And it doesn't matter what the genre is. It doesn't matter whether it's, you know, political, entertainment, sports. It doesn't make a difference. People go to the radio to entertain. And it's so important that you understand your job is to make people think. Your job is to challenge people, to inspire, to inform, all that stuff. And at the end of the day, you have to entertain. And it's really important. This is critical. You don't have to be Chris Rock to be a great entertainer. And people think that they have to be funny to be a great entertainer. And I learned a long time ago that if you're not funny, don't try to be funny. Just entertain. People are entertained by doing different things. Some people are entertained by reading books. Some people are entertained by running. Some people are entertained by going to comedy shows. There are a lot of ways of entertaining. You have to find a way as a communicator, as an on-air personality, to entertain your listeners. Make me think. Be unique and make me as the listener think and challenge me. We talked earlier about, with the interviewing, about being relevant, and that's very important too. You know, opinions are huge. We hear it all the time. Well, this is all about opinions. Well, my question is that opinion relevant to my life? Because if it's not relevant to my life, then you're not entertaining me. You're not connecting with me, and you're not entertaining me. So that's huge, too. Think about, okay, how am I going to connect with that listener? Who, by the way, at the end of the day, we want to become a follower. So no matter where we go, they're following us. It's like Howard Stern going from commercial radio to Sirius satellite radio. They gave him all that money because they knew he has all these followers, not just listeners, but followers. And if you can find a way to entertain people, they'll listen, they'll follow.
I think a lot of ways entertaining is just being human. It's,
mm-hmm.
you know, showing a little self-deprecating humor at times. If we when we make mistakes, we can poke a little fun at ourselves. Those are the types of things that show our humanity to others.
Oh.
And, you know, again, the entertainment versus the information factor. People do want to be entertained, but find a way that, you know, you can convey that persona in a very real way. So the art of the tease, David, in terms of developing one's on-air personality, discuss that.
The art of the tease in terms of going into breaks and teasing what's coming up next and so forth, it's huge today. And a lot of it has to do with what we call these PPMs, these personal people meters. And we have to make sure that people stay listening to us. And the way to do it is by teasing. And it's very important that we understand how to tease. And I strongly suggest that if you're doing a talk show, that you write down your teases. Strongly suggest. Because it's very difficult to come up with a compelling tease at the top of your head in an instant. Very difficult. So we write down that tease going into a break. We tease at the beginning of our show. What's coming up on this show? Okay, and we're not ambiguous with our tease. We don't say, hey, later on today. We never do that. You'd never see that on, you never hear that on television. We don't do it on radio. It's not about that. It's about, okay, in 20 minutes, at 3:40, we are going to bring on whomever. We're going to give you a chance to win a prize, whatever it is. We're constantly teasing. You know, Michael, we're selling. And I learned a long time ago that if you're an on-air talent and you don't like salespeople, you have a problem because you don't understand that you're a salesperson. You are constantly selling when you're on the air. You're selling your product. You're selling your teases. You've got to sell those teases. We're constantly teasing. We're teasing going into our break. We're teasing coming out of our break. Coming out of our break. Hey, you know what? In 25 minutes, we'll give the time. Again, at 3:45, this is what's happening. Now, let's follow up on our tease going into our last break. And it keeps people from leaving your station, and this is where, again, the PPM is so important, the personal people meter, because it's about keeping people locked in and not leaving your show for the 3 or 4 minutes that you're at your break. So you have to be a precise teaser, very important.
And understanding the tease in terms of having people stick around for the break, but also what it does is, you know, in for the future, you want people, if they're going to, because the fact of the matter is nobody sits in front of their television or radio all day waiting for you to come back. But develop the mindset within them that they are going to set an appointment. If the tease is effective enough, they are going to come back at 3:25 to hear what this particular guest has to say. It's worked on me numerous times. If I'm going to go to my refrigerator during this break, if that tease was effective enough, I'm not going to stay as long because I've got to get back to hear what you're going to say. But it's also essential that we deliver on our tease.
No, you have to. Yeah, you have to. That's beyond essential, or people are going to say, well, boy who cried wolf, he's not going to follow up on the tease. Why do I even have to listen to the tease? But this has a lot to do with TSL, time spent listening. And we want people to listen longer, and we want them to tune in more often. And it's okay. It's very much okay. In fact, it's something you should do. Tease for the next day. Okay, at 1:20 today, I'm doing a feature. Guess what? Every day at 1:20, I'm doing a similar feature. I'm going to tease that. The best time to sell your show is during your show. So tomorrow at a certain time, be with us. Yeah, we've got a big interview tomorrow, and it's going to be at a certain time. So don't throw off, this generic, well, we got a big interview sometime tomorrow. We hope you tune in. They're not going to tune in. You know, I want to go back to something you had talked about, being self-deprecating and not taking yourself too seriously. You have to understand, people are doing a lot of things when they're listening to the radio. They're busy. Don't be so arrogant to think that people are going to tune in at the beginning of your show and they're going to listen for all 4 hours. They're not. They come in, they go, they're in, they go. They got lives. They've got things to do. So don't be so arrogant as to think that they're going to hold on to every word you say. No way. And that's why it's essential that you tease properly and you understand how to do it.
Good point. The proper handling of callers and guests in terms of developing one's on-air personality, how does this fit into developing your personality?
Well, first of all, I have a major problem with arrogant talk show hosts. I think it's old school. We saw a lot of that in the 80s. Radio has changed. I don't understand why radio hosts, radio personalities continue to talk down to their callers, talk down to their guests. I don't understand that. We treat these people with respect, and whether it's a caller or a guest, shouldn't make a difference. We do have to understand, though, that there's a different role, and we talked about this earlier, between the guest and the caller. And the caller is going to give us a different opinion, which is great. Okay? And, you know, think about it. In terms of a listener, we can be interactive when it comes to radio. We can't when it comes to a newspaper. Okay? We can't when it comes to television, but we can with radio. So, yes, very often a caller does enjoy listening to a radio show because he knows he can be a participant. So we put the caller on. And I think that too many PDs rely too heavily on callers. I think it's a mistake when a program director says, well, you know, we have to have at least 15 calls an hour. I think that's ridiculous. topic determines how many callers we need. But we have to understand the role of the caller, and we have to realize that the caller will talk until you stop them. And it's your job as the talk show host to edit the caller. You have to be in charge of the conversation. Again, you're the one who's driving this bus. You're the one who determines where you're going. And as a talk show host, you have to take me somewhere. That's your job. Otherwise, you're just spinning in circles. And we don't want that. So very important as a talk show host that the caller doesn't hijack your show. He cannot take over your show. You have to know where you're going, and if he is going to go off topic, get rid of him. The show isn't for the caller, it's for the listener.
Okay. Now, one of the last points I want to touch on in terms of developing one's on-air personality is, why is storytelling so important?
I love storytelling. I can't tell you how important it is. I think it's a great human connector. Again, let's think in terms of being a personality, not a talk show host, okay? And, you know, it's a misnomer. People, I hear it all the time. Well, I want to be a talk show host. Be a personality. And as a personality, we're constantly telling stories. And it's a great connector. And that, at the end of the day, is what we're trying to do. We're trying to connect. You and I have talked a lot in the past about that word you, the importance of the word you, right? It means that we're connecting. How are you? What are you thinking? And it makes me, the listener, David Brody, say, oh, you know what? That guy's talking to me. And that's what storytelling does. Opens your heart. It allows me to get inside inside that sphere that you might have. And too many talk show hosts are afraid to bring their personal life into a show. You know what? I want to get to know you. I really think it's important as a listener that I get to know you. I get to know all facets of you. You know, that's what great talk show hosts do. They're not afraid to discuss really anything. And part of, I know one of the things you want to do is talk about do's and don'ts. And one of the do's is to take risks. Be a risk taker as a talk show host. You know what? I'm going to go for it. I'm going to do that. Jared Max, very quickly, Michael, if I can talk about Jared Max for a moment. Jared Max is a talk show host in New York. And just recently he announced on the air that he's gay. And he said, you know what, I got to do it because I want to be perceived as who I am, this real, genuine person. I don't want to be perceived as a phony, and I want you to know more about me. You're going to listen to me every day. I want you to know as much about me as you possibly can, and it's important for me to let you know that I'm gay, and that's what he said. And he told some stories about, you know, how he had been abused, and I thought it was a very poignant moment. So, yeah, storytelling, very important.
It brought him down to a human level.
Oh, without a doubt. That's a great way of phrasing it.
Made him vulnerable. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you did allude to it. Let's move on to the next section here about some of the do's and don'ts for show hosts, which is essential. And oftentimes we're told, you know, what not to do. But it's important to understand what we should be doing in its place. So explain.
Well, there are a lot on the list. I'll give you a few off the top from our friend Bruce Gilbert, who spoke at one of my seminars when he was the general manager of the ESPN Network, and a few that he came up with. Be yourself. We've already talked about that. Be likable. People tend to listen to people they like. Even Rush Limbaugh. I thought this was great. Rush Limbaugh not too long ago said, I do want to be liked. I want to sound likable, and I do want to be liked, no question. You mentioned be self-deprecating. How important is that? Huge, right? For the guy who says, I was wrong. I don't think there's anything more powerful that you as a talk show host, as a personality, can say than, I was wrong. I made a mistake. It's okay. You're human. We all make mistakes. Be honest. Be who you are. You're not perfect. No one's ever done a perfect show. Never been done, never will be done. We all make mistakes. Be honest. You make a mistake, own up to it. Be a normal talking person. Don't announce. Be real. Don't be a phony.
Let's stop on that one because that's a problem a lot of people have. be a normal talking person.
Yeah.
The tendency for new and young broadcasters is to sound like an announcer.
Sure.
Hey, come on down. Or 7:25. You've got 10 more minutes to get to work, so give us a call. I mean, that becomes the announcer.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work. We're not announcers. We're personalities. And the radio jargon, too, I can't tell you how often I will stop a tape during a coaching session and say, wait a minute, let me ask you this question. Would you use that word if you were in your dorm room and you're talking to a friend, just the two of you, or you're in a bar and the two of you just sitting there over a couple of brews, would you use that word? No, I wouldn't. Okay, then why are you using it on the radio? No reason to. And if you're going to use radio jargon, then you're not real. You're not who you are. Another important do is do have an opinion. And we touched on this. But have a relevant opinion. I don't care about your thoughts on something that happened in 1904. It doesn't matter. No one cares. So be timely. Be relevant with your opinion.
And also, let me just add in, be genuine with your opinion.
It's got to be you.
To be the devil's advocate, to play the devil's advocate is tiresome.
Yeah.
And not only that, if one doesn't have conviction behind their opinion, they'll be blown over mighty quickly when discussing their points with either callers or guests that come on.
Right. No question about it. And another one is be prepared. Just inexcusable to not prepare. There's no other way of phrasing it.
David, when you're working with talent, you talk about being prepared. That's very vague. How much preparation is generally required? Are there any guidelines where a person can know they're adequately prepared for an upcoming show they will be hosting?
Well, I'll tell you what Colin Coward told us at our seminar in Hartford. He said, I prepare 24/7. I'm always preparing. I'm always thinking in terms of what can I use on the show the next day? Maybe you're at a restaurant and something happened. Maybe you're at the gym and something happened. And I'm not talking when Colin talks about 24/7. He's not talking about reading newspapers or watching television. You know, there's so much more to prepare for your show than just reading, although you have to be well-read. That's huge. You really have to be well-read. And if you're a sportscaster, you know what? Go beyond the sports section. In fact, I tell all my sports guys, first thing you pick up when you look at your newspaper is anything but sports. Be as well-read as possible. But preparation goes way beyond the television, the newspaper, way beyond it. Look around. Michael, we talked about that word curiosity, right? Curiosity. Be curious about everything around you. Your eyes as a talk show host, they've got to be huge. You have to see the world, everything around you, because you never know when something that you've just seen is going to make for a great segment the next day or the day after. And that's the greatness of a guy like Colin Coward. He understands that.
Well, Colin was guilty of using one of the seven deadly sins, which was hyperbole, and because obviously none of us can prepare 24/7. So let's drill down a little deeper with that concept, because this is something a lot of young show hosts want to know. What actually is adequate preparation?
Well, the rule of thumb is 2 hours of prep for every hour you're on the air.
Okay.
If you want a formula, that's always been the rule of thumb, 2 to 1.
And I've found generally you'll probably use maybe 25% of that. The only problem is you don't know what 75% you won't use or need.
Right, and the important thing there is don't force it. Don't ever force it. And especially if you're doing play-by-play, and that's an accurate number, 25%. I've heard that from quite a few play-by-play announcers. Howard David is a terrific play-by-play announcer, came to one of our seminars that was in Chicago, and that's the exact number that he gave, 25%. And if you're using more than that 25% figure, then you're trying to put way too much into that 2.5 hours.
Kind of an interesting exercise I've done in the past just looking at this is sometimes you can go to radio stations and they'll have webcams. If you can go to the radio station website. And I got this idea when I saw something on the news one night, and they had Rush Limbaugh in his radio station, and he had a stack of papers in front of him that he was reading from, and he'd take a paper, mm-hmm. and that was his show prep. But there was no way he was getting through that. So I started to look at some of the webcams and started to realize that most of the show hosts will come in there with a, you know, an inch or 2 inch thick stack of papers that they will use to, you know, give them pointers or points of reference or whatever. But they're not using all of that.
No, and you shouldn't use all of that. I do a lot of topic development, and I love topic development. It's so much fun. We're going to take angles that are interesting, that are so unique, and we're going to turn them into segments. And if we're on for 3 hours, if we have three or four really hot topics, we have a great show, tremendous show. And I don't need to read articles on the air. Don't ever do that. It's another big mistake that you hear from people. Oh, okay, I'm prepared. I got a whole article, and I'm going to read this. Personalities don't do that. Extract some words from that article. Extract, you know, some quotes from that article. Don't read the whole article on
right.
there. Don't ever do that.
Yeah, and that was my point. I'm certain they were doing like a lot of us have done, which is maybe you highlight a certain aspect of it or a city that this incident happened in or the name mm-hmm. of the mayor or whatever
right.
you may need. So let's move on, David. Another any more do's for developing your show host personality?
Well, let me see. What I can think of. Do's. Well, we talked about being well-read. That's important. Learn how to write. That's huge. Huge. Really have to be a good writer to be a good storyteller. Let's see what else here. Understand, too, how to ring an emotional bell. I spent a lot of time on that. We want to draw emotion out of people. Happiness, sadness, excitement, whatever it is. And being a personality, you'll be able to do that, as opposed to being a talk show host. We talk about taking risks. Don't be stupid. Don't do something that's going to get you fired or your station heavily fined. But take a risk. We have to do that as an on-air personality. Some of the don'ts, let me hit a few don'ts. And I think I did touch on this, Michael. Don't talk down to your listeners. No one wants to be belittled. Treat your listener the way you want to be treated. You talked about having that know-it-all complex. I believe you did. Don't be a know-it-all. No one wants to hang around a know-it-all in person, and we don't want to listen to that know-it-all, that person who says, well, it's my way or the highway. It's not what this is about. This is about, okay, I have an opinion. I'm the talk show host. I have an opinion, and I'm going to throw it out. And I hope you agree. If you don't, that's okay, too. But I'm going to make you think. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to come up with my research, with my intellect, my ideas. I'm going to make you think. And it's okay at the end of the day if you don't agree with me. That's fine. That's all right. We talked about don't load up on stats. Don't be boring. Seems simple. Talked at the beginning about entertaining. Don't be boring. And a lot of people don't really understand that. And I think the last don't is don't be a professor. That doesn't work. You know, we're not speaking to a huge audience. I mentioned the word you as a great connector. Yes, it is broadcasting, but the reality is it's one-on-one. And, you know, we're not at some banquet talking down to 1,000 people. And we're not in a classroom. We're not a professor. We get enough of that in, you know, in our school years. So be a communicator and have fun. Maybe that's the most important thing here. Have fun. It'll work for you.
I would have to chime in on one as far as the don'ts, and that's mm-hmm. it's really a major one to me personally, and it's don't be phony.
Sure.
Because if you're being phony, you're not being you. And the essence of what we are discussing here today in being a show host is being the best you that you possibly can be. And if you're being phony, you're being something other than you. So that's one that I would, a little wisdom that I would impart. Okay, David, in conclusion, as we draw to an end for this particular training session, how about briefly touching on some general rules for being a great talk show host or being a great show host, even if it's television, from your perspective, someone in the industry, someone whose clients are being hired on a regular basis, they're being promoted on a regular basis, what are some of the general rules that you have seen that have contributed to their success?
I think we've covered a lot of the attributes that you need to have as a great communicator. Being you, you touched on it. I don't know that you can really put your finger on anything more important. Be you. Be the best you can be. And understand you're going to make mistakes, and it's okay. It's all right. You know, go on the air and you know, say, yeah, I blew it. I made a mistake today. That's okay. My prediction was wrong. That's all right. Very quickly, I've done a lot of work with a guy named Arnie Spanier, this thinking genius. And I remember there was an NCAA football game with Florida and Ohio State, and they called me one day at CNN, and they said, we'd love to put Arnie on. We want Arnie to talk about the game. Well, to make a long story short, Arnie was not only wrong with his prediction, well, it wasn't even close. He had the wrong team. It was a blowout, just terrible. So they called me the next day, and they said, we'd love to get Arnie back on and make fun of his prediction. This is big-time stuff, right? CNN. And they said, how do you think Arnie would feel about coming back on? I said, let me tell you something. He would love it. There's no one in our industry more self-deprecating than Arnie Spanier, the stinking genius. Doesn't take himself too seriously. He'd love to do it. And I called Arnie, and I said, they want to bring you back on. He's like, oh, I'd love to. And he goes back on. And the first thing they do is they play this prediction from the day before. And Arnie's like, that wasn't me. That was an imposter. That wasn't me. And they're like, Arnie, it looked like you. All right, it was me. Boy, that was a terrible prediction on my part. And that's why people love this guy. Don't take yourself too seriously. Because at the end of the day, all we're doing is sitting behind a mic. And we're trying to entertain people. That's it.
And let me add the one thing that I have seen, and I know you can't say this because this is your business, but one of the great threads, common threads I have seen from those that have really gone on to greater heights to maximize their ability are those that have not arrived. Those who continue to receive training, who continue to learn and work and improve, and who seek to. You know, our doctors need to maintain continuing education to stay, you know, apprised of all the changes within the medical industry. Our lawyers need to be recertified and take continuing education. Our nurses. But talk show hosts, a problem that I see happen far too often is that once they have arrived, regardless of the location of where they are, they stop learning.
They get fat, they get lazy.
They stop developing whatever in terms of, you know, maybe coaching, working one-on-one with talent who's going to look at them objectively but critically in order to help to continue to polish the ongoing gem that they are. So
I learned a long time ago, and I think I touched on it just a few minutes ago. No one has ever done a perfect show. It's never
That's
been
right.
done. Never yep. been done. Always look to improve. And as Bruce Gilbert has said so often, the moment you think you know it all and you can't get better, that's the moment you probably should just bail out, because there are a lot of people behind you who understand that they do need to get better. Colin Cowherd is another person who's going to be in my book, and I asked him to explain, describe his tremendous success at ESPN. And he said to me, I attribute it to the fact that I am the most coachable person in this building. He said, you can ask any one of the program directors, and there are many at ESPN. He said, no one is more coachable than I am. I am constantly asking for ways to get better. And you know what? If Colin Cowherd is asking his boss for ways to get better, shouldn't we all do that?
That's right. Okay, David, in coming to conclusion, what we do with all of our training sessions is, in order to prevent this from just becoming more information that goes in one ear and comes out the other, maybe some of it sticks, we always have the listeners take an action step. And so the action step for this particular training module on how on the show hosting secrets, how to be a great show host, is for that for you to conduct an interview this week, in 1 week, conduct an interview and use what you have learned from this, the six critical words for interviews. Use one of those. Listen to the seven deadly sins of interviewing and make sure that you're asking one question at a time. And record it if you can. If you can do something on a telephone, it doesn't matter if you're interviewing a celebrity. It doesn't matter if you're interviewing your mother, whomever.
Right.
Just put this information into action, apply the seven deadly sins of interviewing, the six critical words that we use for interviews, and then go back, tape it if you can, and go back and listen and self-evaluate. And then you'll start to find areas that maybe you can hone and polish and refine.
And keep practicing.
That's
practice,
right.
Practice, 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 despite what Allen Iverson says, it's very important.
And if you find your place, yourself at that place where you may need further assistance, then David Brody can be reached at the Broadcaster Marketing Services. Again, his web address is www.sportsbroadcastingcoach. And don't let the sports broadcasting get, you know, throw you off. He works with general political and entertainment talk show host and television and radio. He runs the gamut. So reach out to him. Hopefully you enjoyed this teaching session, and we expect to see you or hear you on the air soon.